Brock Purdy got paid last week. Brock Purdy's getting $53 million a year on a five-year deal from the San Francisco 49ers. I read a story about Purdy this week. I didn't realize his family went through a lot of financial strife after the subprime mortgage crash back in 2008. It was a story about like kind of his, like, you know, his upbringing, and nobody recruited him out of high school, and you know, his goal was to get a scholarship. His family was going through a lot of financial hardship, and
his parents have a bunch of condos in Florida.
I don't know what they had, but they took it on the chin in that, it, like, to the point where he's like, man, I look back now and think about some of the conversations my parents were having that he was privy to and didn't totally understand them. And they moved a lot for a few years, you know.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So they, anyway, it was interesting. Obviously, he's come through that, and the family now has more money than they know what to do with based on his contract. I just found it interesting. You know, he's a guy who's, he got his offer from Iowa State very late in the process. Alabama jumped in on him late in the process, but it was as a preferred walk-on, not as a scholarship guy. And he gets to Iowa State, and immediately he gets on campus, and he's tearing it up as a freshman. And he was great for 4 years there, and yet here comes the NFL, the next group, not to believe in him. And he's the, you know, he's Mr. Irrelevant, talked about his draft party and things like that. It was a real, I came away from that story really liking Brock Purdy.
I think the big difference between Brock Purdy's contract and guys like Trevor Lawrence is that Trevor Lawrence got $142 million guaranteed at signing, whereas Brock Purdy got $100 million guaranteed at signing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right around the same category as Jordan Love, Tua Tagovailoa, Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
Like the Trevor Lawrence contract for guys that haven't genuinely really establish themselves, I'd say that's the high water mark. He got way more guaranteed money, has the same average per year as Joe Burrow, and got paid a lot like a made man. Whereas a lot of the other guys where you still have question marks about them after 3 years, they're not, the organization is still hedging a little bit.
Yeah.
They did it with Kyler Murray. You know, Kyler Murray got $100 million guaranteed.
Yep.
So Trevor Lawrence, for a guy that hasn't accomplished anything, Trevor Lawrence is probably the starting spot for CJ Stroud before they, I don't think they would take anything less than Trevor Lawrence's contract.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Here was Brock Purdy. So Brock gets $53 million. I thought this was interesting, and it did make me think about CJ. This was Brock Purdy, did a press conference earlier this week or maybe late last week after signing his extension.
For me, with what I've done and everything, I could hang my hat on the fact that, you know, I've had success in this league, and I'm capable of leading an organization all the way to the end, the Super Bowl. I proved that. And so for me, it's, I know who I am, and I'm going to, you know, obviously want to get what I deserve, but also surround myself, like I said, with guys around me and not just try to take every penny for myself. That's the whole point of negotiating. You know, you go throughout that, you try to meet in a middle ground, and where we ended, man, I'm extremely grateful and happy with.
Okay, that may be a little overblown. I'm trying to leave money for other guys. You still got $53 million. Like, Brady used to take massive pay cuts compared to what he could have gotten. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, versus what it was against the cap. So that's all well and good. It does make me wonder, like, is there going to be any element of CJ Stroud? I think we see Pat Mahomes do this. You never see Mahomes' dollar amount, average annual value. He's off the grid every year. He's not in the top 10, I don't think. He's in the 40s somewhere. That's material. When you start talking about giving up 10 or 15, you know, $20 million compared to what you could get. I mean, Patrick Mahomes should be the highest paid quarterback in the sport based on accomplishment and what that team does every year. And he's never even close.
He's 15th. Yeah. 15th in average per year. Well, tied for 14th with Kirk Cousins. He and Kirk Cousins are both making $45 million a year.
Yeah, and I don't look at those two the same at all. you know, like, he's making the same as Kirk Cousins. I think Purdy saying, like, yeah, I didn't want to take every penny, blah, blah, blah. Well, we don't know. If you had held out for $60 million, would you have gotten it? I do think that if C.J. Stroud has a big year, he is going to be a guy who can reset the market. He plays for a team that is willing to reset markets. We've seen this already.
Right. I don't think it's just as it was with Deshaun Watson when he got his first extension. Remember, if you're inclined to think, oh no, CJ Stroud's agent is David Mulligetta, who gets these huge deals for everybody. Right. He worked with the Texans to get Deshaun Watson a deal that Deshaun immediately tried to bail out of 6 months later.
Yeah.
Not even 6 months. 4 months later.
Whatever it was.
He signed it
in September. He signed it Labor Day weekend. And then try to get out of it in early January. So, yeah, 4 months.
Yeah, 4 months later.
Four months.
So I don't worry about Mulligetta, and I don't worry about the Texans' willingness to spend. I think one thing about the Texans giving up all this guaranteed money, if it helps you feel better or more secure as a fan, is that the difference between the haves and the have-nots in football isn't nearly as big as it is in baseball. Right. But in football, one thing that limits the teams that are more cash poor is that when you guarantee a contract, you have to put that amount that's guaranteed in escrow. So you got to have big loads of cash just sitting around gaining minimal interest well through the entire duration of that contract. And it's a lot easier for the cash rich teams to do it.
Well, and that's which broaches a whole nother topic, which is that Roger Goodell at the meetings, the league meetings last week, the same meetings where they voted down the tush push, Goodell did a press conference and was alluding to the collective bargaining agreement that's going to be coming up in a few years. Because the big things that people are wondering about with that are, is the schedule going to go to 18 games? And are there going to be 16 international games a year? Obviously, right now, the schedule is 17 games in the regular season. And the max that you can have international games is 10 games, according to the CBA. So if they want to do an 18-game season or do more international games or both, they've got to reopen the CBA. The CBA is not set to expire for like another 5 years. But if they reopen that CBA, Goodell didn't even want to talk about the schedule. He's like, well, this is the quote. We did spend time today talking at length about areas of our collective bargaining agreement that we want to focus on. The two areas that we spent time on were really the cap system itself, the integrity of that system, how it's working, where do we need to address that in the context of collective bargaining when that does happen. It was a very lengthy discussion. And I think there is, Seth, I think there is a haves and have-nots thing going on in the NFL, not just with what your escrow thing is a perfect example of that, but these, not to get too cap nerdy, but like these voidable years that teams are using to shove, pay players actual money, but kick the can way down the road on the cap stuff because they can afford to pay the cash now, but the cap is the cap for everybody. Well, we'll just use these voidable years and park this money in the future, and we don't really care about that. There, it reaches a point where there's only certain teams that can do that to a massive extent. Like the Eagles won the Super Bowl. Nobody is doing that method more than the Eagles. The Eagles have like hundreds of millions in cap credit card sitting out there right now that they've paid out to players in cash already. You know,
I think part of it too is I mean, the league has changed so much in the last 20 years in terms of the money involved. And I think some of this stuff is a holdover from back in the days when sports leagues had to worry about one of their franchises becoming financially insolvent, because it's a really bad look for the league if a couple of teams go bankrupt. So some of these are protective measures to protect owners from themselves, but it's gotten to a point now where, the really rich teams, if they're savvy enough, can use it as a big advantage.
Yes.
And but they also still worry about some of the small market teams. If they really botch it, okay, all of a sudden we've got a guy selling under duress. That's not good for the value of the franchises.
No.
So, I don't know. It gets into the weeds in a lot of ways, and yet I guess the sum total of it is, if you're a Texans fan, the Texans are not hurting for cash.
No.
Like they're competing in that league where the actual cash amount of any given deal isn't holding them down at all.
Yeah, I thought about this the other day. You're right. No, the Texans are a have. They're not a have not. I thought about this the other day. Someone was suggesting doing away with the salary cap altogether in the NFL, which I don't think will ever happen. But if you did away with it altogether, what type of team would the Texans be? You know what I mean? Would they be
like, who would they load up on?
Would they be a team like in baseball? It's easier to ascertain this because the competitive balance tax is not like the NFL salary cap. Would they be the equivalent in football of like the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Mets, or would they be more maybe like the Astros, which is that next tier? You know,
that's where it would get really interesting, because it's in baseball, the TV deals are so much different.
Yeah.
So the teams, those New York teams that have these big TV deals, they make so much more. They make 50% more than the other high earners in the league because their baseball or their TV money's so big.
Yep.
Football, you don't have that as much.
You don't have it at all with the TV stuff.
And
to me, the difference in football is where does your owner come from? Like Josh Harris in Washington runs a hedge fund, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like how much of their own money are they willing to dip into to do that?
Right, which is what I'm saying. Like the difference between, you don't have as much of the disparity financially, but you still do have a disparity in terms of just, teams with operating capital and what's their what's their appetite for risk.
Yeah.
I could see the Texans. I think Nick uses a lot of voidable years. He's not afraid to push things off into the future. I think he would be a team. Real question is, okay, are you going to be a team that plunks down a 10-year contract? Like, whatever the equivalent is in football. In football, you're not going to get long-term contracts like that. I think you're going to get teams that are aggressively pushing money off into the future.
Yeah.
It feels like Nick would be, like, above average in aggressiveness with that, but not to the point where, like, he very much tries to keep the long term in mind. So he wouldn't backload a boatload of contracts.
Yeah, I'm wondering. To me, it's more about ownership. If we're talking about a world where there's no cap, you know what I mean? Yeah. Just you spend what you spend. To me, I think the McNairs would go to the end of their wherewithal to put a competitive football team on the field. The question is the end of their wherewithal the same as it is for Josh Harris of Washington or Jerry Jones in Dallas? You know, because that's what, when there's no salary cap, then it's purely based on the willingness of owners to spend money.
It'll never happen in the NFL. But the Mets are the cautionary tale. Yeah. You've got an owner he's one of the richest men in the world.
Yeah.
And
you can mess up.
He's not looking for the return on investment in any specific deal. He just wants to spend it's almost his personal plaything.
Yeah.
And that's why the owners will never allow it.
I'm not sitting here saying there's a chance of it happening. I'm living in a fantasy world and wondering if it were to be that way, what mentality do the Texans have? And I think the Texans have a mentality at the ownership level that will do whatever it takes to win within their means to be able to do that. The salary cap is the great equalizer for everybody and all that.
Where the extra revenue comes in football, where you're not getting huge lopsided TV deals, but just the actual attendance itself and the stadium and everything else, that's where that comes into it. Ultimately, the competitive advantage that if you're a fan and you talk about, okay, should this team build a new stadium, the cold, hard truth of the matter is that, yeah, they can be a more competitive team in the NFL if they're cash rich.
That's right.
And it's not as lopsided a difference as it is in baseball. But yeah, you do get a competitive advantage by being rich.
Florio thinks that there is a big fight coming between the players and the owners as far as the split in revenue, which I think is right around 50-50 right now. Mm-hmm. That there seems to be a sentiment. He's basing it totally on just reading into Goodell's statement and what he's saying. But Florio reads into, and Florio always reads into pretty much everything with what the most sensational angle could be on it. But it's interesting to think about, which is, all right, we're making way more money now than we ever made as a league. Like the media rights are growing exponentially. Are the players making a little too much of this pie right now?
Oh, they're going that route.
Yeah. That's what Florio thinks.
As a player, I'd say, look, your fixed costs don't seem all that much different. And if the margins are increasing, then I feel like that you don't have to cover your nut with as large a percentage of the total revenue.
Yeah.
I'm on to you, NFL owners.
The problem
is I've poured over P&Ls all day long before, all right?
And well, as Mike Florio points out, that when it comes to the major sports and the collective bargaining, the sport that caves the quickest has historically been the NFL.
Yeah.
The union.
Oh, and the owners had a brilliant tactic the last time around. They appealed to the lower and middle class players.
Yeah.
They said, hey, the vast majority of guys in the NFL are guys that are only going to be playing a few years. We'll give them as many benefits as possible for the blue collar dudes. And all we need is their votes. And that's the way it worked out. Yeah. They appealed to the mat. They became populists and it worked. They weren't trying to kowtow to the superstars of the league. They're saying, hey, listen. Hey, journeyman offensive lineman that's been on 5 teams in the last 4 years.
Yeah.
Your vote counts just as much as the superstar quarterback.
Dude, yeah, it's dissension among the ranks, man. That's what they created, dissension among the ranks. Someone says on the text page, this is 2541, read an article where Purdy, after accounting for taxes, will actually take home less than 50% of his salary. That happens with every player that signs a big deal in California. We get the graphic. Steph Curry signs max deal. You know, he's really only he signs a max deal for $48 million a year, blah, 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 blah. At the end of the day, he takes home $22 million. You know?
And that ultimately yields a Draymond Green on a podcast talking about how it's set up for NBA players to not get rich. he cited, as his evidence, California state income tax. Yes. Remember, this is the league doing to them. And the fact that he's been fined more than any other human being, maybe in the history of sports. So that, yeah, like somehow that's all aligned against NBA players in general and not just the tax code of the state you play in and the fact that you individually have got. And if Draymond Green isn't rich, Sean, after just because he's been fined that much, then the problem's not with Draymond. The problem's not with the NBA.
No, that's a Draymond Green problem. No, no. And Draymond's going to wind up on TV. That's the scary thing. After all this, he's going to wind up on TV saying dumb stuff like that. Imagine every team in the AFC South making the playoffs, LOL, and 64 teams is wild. I can hear O'Brien explaining how hard it is to win in college football when 64 teams, that's from Derwin, making the playoffs. He would make it under that scenario. I mean, the Boston College, they won like 5 games last year. You'd make a 64-team tournament.
They'd play the play-in game to a 64-game tournament. And Bill O'Brien would be raising the banners on what an achievement they've accomplished.
Yeah. Someone's wagging a finger at you and I, Seth, here on the text page.
What'd we do?
Well, this is talking about you and I complaining about how opaque the Astros are with the injury news. Yeah. The media gets like this because teams that owe y'all nothing make y'all's jobs harder. Be like Berman and McLean used to be and get you some sources or move on. Sorry, sir.
What's up with this y'all talk? Yeah. I was pretty much defending Chandler Roman.
You were. Yep.
You know what? There used to be a day in the time in this country when texters wouldn't just randomly assume that both co-hosts are saying the exact same thing.
That's right.
Maybe put your listening ears on, fella.
Or move on.
I do think it is. In the grand scheme of things, I don't think people really care that much about it. It ends up becoming a grudge match between the media that covers the team and the team itself. And sometimes people in sports media have a hard time realizing that, okay, their interests aren't quite the same as the fans at large.
Yep, yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Boy, you attached the three words or move on at the end of a text. That's a pretty good finisher right there. I'm going to start attaching that to the end of things or move on. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. All right, ESPN, Dan Graziano just dropped.
Hey, and by the way, news alert and news flash. All right, a lot of people that have those great sources are when the team is hand delivering news to guys themselves.
Yes.
So like that's a little bit more of why potentially the beat writers might be more peeved than others, because there's other situations where the team will, you know, hand deliver certain little juicy nuggets themselves to the beat writers.
Do the Texans have one of the biggest question mark jobs in the league? And is the league short selling the Texans right now? We will discuss that coming up next.